Chapter 19. I looked around the giant chamber in the dim greenish light from the sconces as they reflected off the surface of the water. In the center of the lake was a raised platform, and on the platform was some sort of machine that looked as if the sword chair from Game of Thrones had an abomination of a love child with a bowflex. "Hey, H," I said, as I helped Amaya and Jenner down from Prosper's saddle. "What is that for?" I pointed to the odd contraption and watched as Amaya seemed to be immediately drawn in to get as close a look as she could of the machine.
"I don't actually know, Chief,"
the Falcon Man said as he swung his pack over his shoulders and patted Victory.
"My father was obsessed with it at one point, but when he couldn't get it to perform the way he wanted, he just abandoned it down here. Come on, we can leave the canterflies here."
"Will the water be safe for them to drink?"
Jenner asked, as he eyed the dark surface of the underground lake.
"Back when this estate was mostly used for breeding canterflies, this place acted like a nursery, and the water was regularly purified, so Prosper and Victory will be just fine," he said, as he headed toward a set of doors that were at least 12 feet high and went to grab the handles.
"Stop!"
Anwar suddenly shouted, and she yanked Horace back before he could touch the circular metal.
"There is a signature surrounding this door."
"What?"
The Falcon Man squinted at the offending handle, as if it shit on the bed.
"You think it's enchanted for the worst?"
"The signature is long faded, but there all the same,"
the Ibex woman said, and her opalescent eyes glittered with her mage-like abilities.
"Impossible," Horace said. "Nothing happened to me last time I was here, and I broke in the same way."
"When was it you broke in?"
Anwar asked.
"Middle of the night," the Falcon Man answered.
"That explains it,"
she said, and rubbed her hands together as if she was chafing them for warmth.
"It is currently mid-epoch when the sun is highest in the sky and the magic is strongest. Even though these enchantments have begun to fade with the death of Arcus, there are still remnants we must be wary of."
Then the stoic Ibex woman's hands started to glow faintly, and after a moment of concentration, she placed them on the handle. A weak red flash illuminated the circular metal, and Anwar sighed and dropped her hands.
"That should do it,"
she said, and motioned for Horace to go ahead. The Falcon Man shot her an askance look and carefully hooked his index finger through the handle in order to open it. All of a sudden, Anwar gasped sharply as if she forgot about something, and Horace yelped and snatched his hand back.
What?
He chanted, and hopped back a few paces as if waiting for a deadly laser beam to zap him off the face of the planet.
"Nothing,"
the Ibex woman shrugged, opened the door for herself, and tossed the smallest of smirks over her shoulder at the Falcon Man.
"Oh, you're going to pay for that,"
Horace said, and took off after her shiny autumn fall of hair.
"Children,"
Jenner scoffed, as he entered the yawning corridor at a more sedate pace. "Amaya?" I questioned when I saw the Oryx woman was still gazing out over the lake at the machine. She didn't seem to hear me, so I came to stand next to her. "Amaya?"
"There's something wrong about that machine,"
she murmured in a distant voice, and I eyed the thing once more. Its jagged edges and chains gave it a sinister aura, and I couldn't help but agree with her.
"Yeah, let's hurry up so we can get out of here," I suggested, and gently tugged her by the arm.
She hesitated for a moment, and then as if she was breaking out of a trance, she blinked her rain-colored eyes, nodded, and followed me down the eerie corridor. In a word, Arcus Dohler's estate was absolutely huge. For starters, it took us at least an hour to make our way from the belly of the crow, and most of that was spent walking up a gradual incline until we could see sunlight peering in through the cracks of the cave ceiling above us.
"I feel a breeze,"
Jenner said, and hurried toward where the light was strongest.
"The cave mouth is just around this next bend," Horace said,
and true to his word, all of us were able to leave the darkness behind and walk out into the dazzling afternoon sun. At first, it hurt to keep my eyes open, but when they finally adjusted, I was able to take a look around at the estate the council seemed so interested in. "Whoa," I remarked to myself, when I took in the sight of just how much land there was. I thought Icarion was huge with its near 200 acres, but the Aerie was at least twice that. I supposed it was only typical of a place that boasted some of the top animal husbandry on the island. However, if this place still had any of its former glory, it was well hidden under tracts of barren and dusty land, stables and training arenas all in various states of disrepair, and crooked dead trees where a forest used to line the pastures. The manor itself was carved high up in the rock of the crater's rim, similar to the conical shape of a swiftlet's nest, and it gave new meaning to the estate's name, the Aerie. Below the Aerie was a drawbridge leading into the entrance, and as we got closer I could also see there was a dried-up moat under the stone bridge that had turned to dust some time ago. "How do we get in?" I asked the Falcon Man, as we all walked toward the bridge's end, and gazed up at the drawbridge still in its fully retracted state. "Well, last time I had to squeeze through the bars of the dungeon that used to drain into the moat," Horace explained.
"I'm not sure that's going to quite work for my sister and me,"
Anwar pointed out, and she gestured to her large ibex-like horns that sprouted from the crown of her head, and would definitely make things like squeezing through a set of bars mighty challenging. "Horace and I can go and then let you all in once we make it around from the inside," I suggested.
"Or we can let this little one help us,"
Amaya said in her dreamy voice, and she shielded her eyes from the sun so she could fix her eyes on the sky, or rather, on a familiar, flapping creature in the sky.
"Skraw!"
"Rufus!" I cheered when the dusty yellow crow moth spiraled down from his excited flight and then barreled into my chest like a cuddly cannonball.
"Skraw! Skraw! Skraw!"
The gold seeker cawed happily and nuzzled his dusty feathered head under my chin like a Labrador retriever. "I missed you too, buddy," I laughed as I let the crow moth perch on my head. "Is Tovish here?"
"Skraw!"
he said and launched off my head. "I guess that means yes," I chuckled, and watched as he flew across the dusty moat, up the crumbling slope, and landed on the stone wall at the base of the Ares Manor.
"Maybe there's a hole in the wall somewhere,"
Amaya suggested, and jumped down from the bridge so she could head across the dry ground.
"As long as there's no squeezing involved,"
Anwar said, and followed after her sister. Horace, Jenner, and I all exchanged looks and then followed the ladies. Rufus cawed when he saw us climbing up the rocky slope. "You're right, Amaya, there must be a break in the wall," I mentioned. And we all followed the crow moth as he hopped along the ridge of the wall and clicked his beak like a little metal detector. The gold seeker clicked 3 times in a row, fluttered down from his perch, and pecked at a pile of rubble that had crumbled away from the top. "It looks low enough for us to climb over if we work together," I said, as I eyed the damaged top section of the wall. "But the question is, however did Tovish manage to get over by himself?" Horace asked.
"He didn't,"
came that familiar craggy voice, in a tone as dry as the moat bed, and all of us turned simultaneously as a big pair of wizened koala ears rounded the corner with a peg-legged thunk-thunk.
"Tobias Tovish, is that you?"
Jenner questioned with a grin.
"Ah, Cornelius, my studious pupil, it has been an age,"
Tovish said, and clasped Jenner on the shoulder.
"And young Alex and Horace, it's good to see you both again."
"Great to see you too, Tovish," I said, and clasped the koala elder's outstretched hand. "How is Gatetown and Gelavane treating you?"
Curmudgeonly as always," he grunted,
and in his hand was a walking stick he stabbed into the ground.
"Lately he's been more deranged than usual, so it's good to be away."
"Have you discovered anything else about Vane we should know?" I asked, as I swung my pack around, and I pulled out some rope and a device that operated similarly to a grappling hook and tied them together.
"Only that he's been especially interested in craft and objects that can explode,"
the elder sighed, as he shook his white-eared head.
"Aside from this new hobby, Vane has been more erratic and especially paranoid ever since the tithing ceremony. He started ridding himself of his staff, and has traded all of his concubines. The only reason he hasn't gotten rid of me yet is a mystery. I've already catalogued the old fool's library, as pithy as it was. To be honest, I think he's forgotten about me due to the fact something much bigger is on his mind."
"Like what?" Horace echoed my own question, as I tossed the hook over the wall and yanked the rope taut.
"This is the mystery I have been running in circles trying to figure out,"
Tovish grunted. All I know is whatever he's plotting will be coming to fruition if we don't act soon.
Thanks again for risking yourself by coming, even if Vane is distracted with his plans for world domination, I said, and then made my way up the rope to the top of the wall.
All the more reason haste is required, Jenner added with a sage nod.
We all agreed with his pronouncement and hurried with trying to get ourselves inside already. Maybe it was the bleak landscape or the evidence of the much-hated previous owner. But it was not hard to want to get in and out when there were such strong vibes of creepiness emitting from the place. When everyone was up and over the wall, we all found ourselves inside a courtyard that must have been similar to the one at the palace with the huge potted trees. That courtyard was known for its healing properties due to the warm ambience it exuded. And based on the rusted metal incense holders still dangling from the dead trees, it was safe to assume this courtyard was used for a similar purpose at one point, which made it even more of a shame to see all the evidence of rampant neglect.
You know, my father started acting similarly to Vane when he fell further into his obsession with the arcane magics, Horace mused, as we wound our way through the maze of potted trees. As you can tell, he gave up maintaining his estate, and all that went with it.
What was Arcus so obsessed with? Tovish asked with a sharp look.
Oh, all sorts of things, really, Horace said, as he led us into a breezeway with a line of obsidian columns as tall as skyscrapers. They seemed to shoot up from the ground to support the underside of the strange manor stuck to the mountain's edifice like a barnacle. The short answer is anything that could increase his power.
And the long answer?
Jenner queried.
The long answer you will find in the library, my good sir, the Falcon Man said, and was silent the rest of the long walk toward what was hopefully an entrance into this goddess-forsaken place. At long last, we came across another door, which would have been a cause to celebrate, but there was one vital thing missing about this door. The knob.
Well, now what? I asked the resident expert, and watched him scowl at the offending door with no handle.
Paranoid bastard, Horace grumbled, and examined the space where a knob should have been.
In the center of the black door was something that looked like a hand-carved bullseye.
What's this?
Horace reached out to poke the center of the bullseye, but was summarily stopped by four people, me included.
That would not be wise, laddie,
Tovish growled in his old leather voice.
It was put there for a purpose, and I'm guessing it's not for fun.
Jenner chipped in.
The signature is stronger on this door than the other one,
Anwar explained right after with her glittering irises.
Can you break it?
Amaya asked her sister as she tilted her silver-horned head.
I can try,
the mage woman said, and she chafed her hands together again until they were glowing. Then, without touching the door itself, the Ibex woman hovered her palms over the odd sigil.
This requires more than magic to disarm,
she concluded after a few moments of concentration.
It requires a sacrifice of bone.
Yikes, I said. You mean... Horace held up the finger he was intent on poking into the finger-sized hole of the bullseye.
If this is a lock,
Anwar explained, as she traced the carving with one finger before holding it up.
Then this is the key.
So you put a finger in the lock, and then what happens to your finger? I asked, just to clarify what I thought she was saying.
The sacrifice is of bone,
Amaya answered instead.
Arcus wanted to make sure anyone willing to come in would also be willing to lose a finger.
We gotta find another way in, I said.
There is none, Tovish sighed. I looked all around this place for another entry 3 times.
We might have to do your plan, Horace, and get in from the moat, I sighed, and hefted my pack higher.
But we've wasted so much time already, the Falcon Man said, as his black-feathered crest ruffled in irritation.
I'd rather waste time than have anyone lose a finger, I said, and felt green just at the prospect. No offense, H, but your old man was sick.
Trust me, I share the sentiment,
the Falcon Man grumbled with a hand flat over his stomach and a bitter twist to his lips. Ever-observant Amaya saw his expression, and her forehead buckled in sympathy. She reached out a hand, it seemed, on reflex, but then as if she suddenly remembered herself, she stopped short and tucked her hand back by her side.
You should know. Your father wasn't always that way,
she said with a familiar pearly sheen to her gaze.
It was the desperate need to never let himself be put in a position where he could lose his wife, your mother, his heart and soul again, that led him to his obsession. It wasn't your fault.
Horace sucked in a sharp breath and cast his gold-green eyes down and away from Amaya's knowing gaze. I knew the feeling, so I patted him on the shoulder. That nail-on-the-head thing the augur woman tended to do took a little getting used to. Yes, well, they always told us in the academy not to let the magics consume you, because they are potent indeed. He finally recovered and adjusted the strap of his bow across his chest. Well, shall we head back the way we came and go around?
Wait, Horace,
Anwar said, and put her hand on his wrist.
Do you also remember what else they taught us? The magics must follow what is dictated, but as long as it isn't specific, the fulfillment of an enchantment such as this one is open to interpretation.
I don't follow, he said.
Fear,
the ibex woman said, instead, and then took Horace's hand so she could hover it over the carved bullseye.
Are there any parameters to what is required?
I could see the struggle it was for the Falcon Man to focus while the pretty ibex woman held his hand, but he managed to pull it together in order to do what she asked. The alchemist's eyes flashed gold for a moment before he looked at Anwar with a big smile. It just requires bone, but it doesn't specify where it needs to come from, he said. Tovish, Rufus is a seeker moth, right?
A gold seeker, yes,
the koala elder said. Do you think we could send him to go look for the bone of a small animal or something so we could try and unlock the door? I asked, as I caught on to what they were talking about.
Rufus really only has a penchant for seeking gold, so I'm not sure how good he will be with your request, but we can find out.
Tovish then turned to look at the yellow gold seeker.
What say you, Rue? Can you find us a bone?
Rufus cocked his head back and forth, and then turned his bulbous red eyes onto me. Bone, Rue, I said, just like I saw proud pet owners do with their dogs at the park. Go get a bone.
Scraw!
He said, and then took off in a dusty flap. It wasn't long before he returned with a stone in his beak.
No, Rufus,
Tovish said with a weary shake of his big-eared head.
B-O-N-E.
The crow moth zipped off for a second time and brought back a knotted and twisted twig.
No, you ridiculous thing, the old archivist grumbled. Bone! Bone!
Rufus tilted his head this way and that and spat out the twig.
It's no use, Jenner huffed.
No, look,
Amaya said, and pointed to Rufus as he waved his frilly antenna.
I think he's picking something up.
We all watched in fascination as the little crow moth crawled on the ground as if he was scenting for something. The little creature then made a loop around each person's leg before coming to mine when he stopped and looked up at me with his big red eyes. What is it, boy? I asked. Rufus cocked his head a full 180 and then proceeded to crawl up my body and onto my travel pack. He clicked and tried to tug free something half-sticking out of the top of the pack. What do you got? I reached over my shoulder in order to grab the object, and saw it was the mysterious wrapped thing Velrala gave me before we departed. I'd totally forgotten about it. But even when I removed the cloth, I was confused as to what it was she gave me. What is it? Horace asked, as he stared down at the object that looked like an ivory chopstick.
It's a hairpin,
Anwar said, and brought her glowing palms closer so she could read the object in my hands.
And it appears to be made of bone. But not just any bone. It's the bone of the Lawfolk.
Lawfolk?
Jenner asked, as his gray-furred ears perked upward.
You mean like Madam Midgeon's ilk?
I have heard of this Madam Midgeon before,
the ibex woman said, as her eyes and hand turned back to normal.
Most of the Lawfolk prefer privacy and don't mingle with the rest of us Aventolians. But Midgeon's reputation precedes her. It makes me wonder how Velrala came to own it. Or how she sensed you would need it in the first place,
Amaya added. Will it work? I brought the bone hairpin up to get a closer look.
Try it and see,
Anwar said. So I did just that, and stuck the bone hairpin into the middle of the hand-carved bullseye. A metallic grinding could be heard, and a loud chink sounded before the hairpin dropped to the ground a few inches shorter than it started. Finally, the door popped open with a hiss, as if it hadn't been opened in years, which maybe it hadn't.
Well done, lad!
Tovish cheered, and scratched at Rufus's head when he came to perch back on his shoulder. Okay, so we'll swing by the library first so Tovish and Jenner can get a head start on the books. But then there's another thing I want to check out, I said, as we all went inside. What did you have in mind, Chief? Horace asked, as he led us to a series of stairs that dumped out into the main antechamber of the Ares Manor. This antechamber seemed like it connected to the rest of the manor where the stairs branched off in their many directions and went ever upward like the valves of a heart. We've got to make a stop at the weaponry, I said, with an excited, it's almost Christmas type of grin. I need a new crossbow.
Excellent,
Horace said, as he rubbed his hands together with a matching grin. I say we drop off our archivists and see what the old bag left behind.
Sounds fine by us,
Jenner said as he wiggled his fingers.
I cannot wait to see what's in store.
If you do not mind, Horace, Amaya and I would like to explore, as long as it's okay with you,
Anwar said with her arm looped through her sister's. I don't mind, he said. You won't get lost, will you?
No,
Amaya said simply as her eyes flashed again like two pearls. Right. You know the way, he chuckled.
But first, let us see if there are any enchantments that need to be broken on the library,
the Ibex woman suggested. And with a plan in hand, the five of us plus Rufus followed the Falcon Man up one of the many staircases and down the many halls until we were all standing in front of an ornately carved bronze door.
That's odd,
Anwar said as her eyes glittered with their magic.
There doesn't seem to be anything keeping us from simply turning the knob and walking in.
That's good, Horace said. But very suspicious. I would have figured if anything needed some serious protection, it would be his coveted library. Keep your eyes peeled for anything unusual, gentlemen.
You do not have to worry about a couple of old codgers like us, lad. Go on and do what you need to do,
Tovish said with a shooing motion. And I could tell he was just as excited as Jenner about getting his furred hands on some books, if not more so. With that, the four of us broke away to go back down a flight of steps where apparently Arcus's weapons cache was located behind another set of bronze doors. After breaking a mild enchantment that required the work of both mage and alchemist alike, the armory was open and ripe for the picking, I hoped. Since Arcus was a bibliophile, there was a chance he liquidated anything he could in pursuit of his so-called coveted knowledge. However, when I walked in to see what we were working with, it was clear my worry was for nothing.
Score!
I said, in stunned awe when the Falcon Man and I entered the armory. Case upon display case was organized and filled to the brim, and they lined the walls and took up almost all the floor space. Narrow aisles stood in rows and made the whole place look like the fucking Tiffany's of weapons. Where are the crossbows? I asked, as I rubbed my hands together like it was my birthday. If I'm reading the method of his madness correctly, then I believe we should start over there, he said, and gestured to the far right. Horace was right. If it was long-ranged weaponry I was looking for, this was the section to go to. Arcus probably had every form of bow or sling imaginable. There was even a bevy of leather whips coiled up under one of the glass cases, which caused my old Indiana Jones fantasies to come to the surface.
Here, try this one, Chief,
Horace said, and snapped me out of my 12-year-old daydream. Which? I asked, and then rounded a tall case to get to him. This, he said with a grin, and handed me a crossbow as shiny black as patent leather, with a case of wicked-looking bolts that bore barbs on the bolt heads. I knew if I shot anybody with those, removing the bolt on their own would be next to impossible. When I put the stock against my shoulder, I found it fit comfortably and acted as an extra appendage like it was a part of me and not just some tool I was holding in my hands. Oh, this thing is a work of art, I said to the Falcon Man, and adjusted the strap so I could sling it across my back. I'm glad someone will be putting it to use, Horace remarked. Why this one? I questioned. If it's yours or something, you can have it back, and I can always find me another one. No, it isn't mine. Well, it is only in the sense that I actually made it, the Falcon Man placated. But my preference will always be that of my trusty longbow. Oh, that's cool you made this, I said, while I continued to admire the quality craftsmanship put into this device. I'd be honored to have it. It's yours, Horace declared with an over-the-top bow. Suddenly a loud crash could be heard coming directly from the room above us, and we both stopped our chortling and looked at each other. What was above this room again, H? I asked. The library, he answered. Thought so, I said, as another huge boom thundered through the ceiling. We exchanged one more horrified glance before we both bolted toward the door.